Welcome to the inaugural episode of Mystery Movies. Title pending, I don't know. We'll see. What's up, guys? We started doing Mystery Movies as a kind of extra we would do in our normal podcast, The Stack Pack. Every time one of these cases, an Unsolved Mysteries, would be made into a goofy Lifetime TV movie, we would cover those. But then we recently started branching out and covering just more interesting movies. So for this first episode, I'm David Howell, and I'm joined by Eli, my stack packer and partner in podcasting crime. We haven't committed any crimes yet, but...
No, not yet. Well, maybe a few misdemeanors.
Yeah.
This is a nice little spin-off series. We're going to keep going. We're going to keep doing this whenever we have some free time. This is going to be fun. This is a good, like, horror flick. I think it's a good episode to, like, kind of start off.
Yeah, it's good because it's the perfect meld of what we've been doing, which is watching a good or interesting movie, and it also being a real story.
Yeah, based on true events.
You notice so how I, like, stumbled when I said good, because... There's a lot of things I do like about this movie, but
there is. I couldn't decide whether I liked this movie or whether I didn't like it. But we'll talk about all that.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, we are the you know how I love Frasier. We're the Frasier to Cheers.
I was going to say like Joni loves Chachi for like isn't that Happy Days, right?
How long did Joni Loves Chachi did that run? I was thinking Frasier because it actually ran for quite a bit.
Yeah, or the one show, the spinoff of Cheers with Joey for like a second.
You mean Friends?
Sorry, yeah, Friends.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
of course, Friends.
Terrible. Let's hope we last longer than that. Yeah, we just want to nerd out. We just want to watch good movies and give our feedback that nobody cares about.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully we'll get some people watching some really good flicks that nobody knows.
And this is the movie we're watching, obviously you could probably tell if you clicked on the episode, The Town That Dreaded Sundown, which is a true story-ish, based on the Texarkana Moonlight Murders, was a killer who went up to lovers' lanes and shot couples and wore a mask and was known as the Phantom Killer.
And people might think, oh, well, at least me, I'm thinking people just because I'm a person and I thought this, very Zodiac-esque, but this guy came out way before Zodiac.
Yeah. We'll get into there's a little rumor.
Lots of similarities.
There's a rumor. People think.
There is a rumor.
The internet's ran crazy with the idea that these two might be the same because it's a bit similar. You know, shooting couples at lover's lanes in a mask. Who knows? But yeah, this movie is directed by the great Charles B. Pierce. I don't know about you, but he is a delight as an actor in this movie. I would not have known that if you didn't text me that little bit of information that Charles B. Pierce, the director, he plays the deputy?
The goofy deputy.
Oh, I thought he played Scuzzball, or what's his name? Skee-ball?
Sparkplug.
Sparkplug? Scuzzball?
He plays Sparkplug.
Oh,
it was
man.
Funny because they called him Sparkplug.
I love... Okay, you know what's so funny is last night we were watching Signs and I was just talking about how M. Night Shyamalan will always give himself such a prominent, like, epic part in his movies, even if it's small. And Charles B. Pierce does not feel the same way. There's no need for this character to be in the movie...
Oh, 100%. You could have written this character out, but he's a delight. As you
said. there is a good amount of levity in this movie, like humor, but it's so like it's got like you know like slide whistles and funny facial expressions.
That's what I loved.
I
loved that this movie didn't. It's a serious movie about a serious thing that happened. But it doesn't take itself too seriously.
No, it doesn't. And when there is a scene of somebody being, like, killed and hunted down, it's... I mean, I'm not going to say it's, like, the scariest thing ever, but they take it dead serious. You know, there's no slide whistles in those scenes.
This movie was considered one of the earliest of the genre, right?
Like, yeah, well, I definitely consider it's interesting because a lot of people say Texas Chainsaw, which is 73, right?
73 or 74.
Okay, that one's 74. And then a lot of people, and then of course Black Christmas, I think is like amazing. Have you seen Black Christmas?
No, I've never seen Black Christmas.
Oh, I have that one.
I've seen the original Chainsaw and the reboot. Obviously, I've seen the stupid reboot. Jessica Biel.
It's weird. That reboot is so pretty that it just ruins it. It's well shot, good acting. It fucks it up. Yeah. I hate it because of
Jessica
that.
Biel's in it, right?
It's yeah, very yeah, forgettable. Yeah.
The other one is so much better.
Yeah.
The original.
But Black Christmas is amazing. I have the Scream Factory edition of that one. I watch it every year. It's got Margot Kidder, like before she played Lois in the Christopher Reeve Superman movies. She is a fucking delight. Like she's the kind of the party animal, always drunk sorority girl. There's a great scene where she keeps, where she's feeding this little kid like white wine and they're like laughing. It's such a good movie and the killer is creepy.
I'm going to have to watch it.
If you see it, you'll be like, damn, I can't believe this is that old because there's Scream vibes, like the killer calls up, but the killer doesn't say things like, what's your favorite scary movie? The killer's like, makes weird, creepy sounds and uses the C-U-N-T word a lot.
Golden State Killer.
Oh, dude, it's a lot like that. I wonder if that's around the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Black Christmas is fucking awesome. But you know what? Some people consider, I kind of want to put Psycho as kind of the first one to get us going. Oh, I guess it's kind of hard to consider Psycho a slasher, but at the end of the day, it is.
Yeah.
People get slashed. It's an interesting example of an early slasher movie, too, because the way it's made, right? It's a little documentary style. Like, it's narrated.
Yeah, almost like this dude that's it almost sounds like almost Morgan Freeman-esque in Andy Dufresne crawled through a river of shit.
There's also a thing about it where I feel like the movie would probably work just as well without the narration.
Yeah, 100%. It's interesting that they chose that style.
The narration is basically the Wikipedia page, right?
Yeah.
And then what we see in the movie is not really what actually happened. So it's just like, why? I mean, why try to present it as so factual?
They claim in the beginning that the movie is factual, that only the names were changed.
Yeah, which isn't true.
They took some liberties.
Yeah. And I was thinking maybe they did the whole documentary thing as a response to Texas Chainsaw, because a lot of people thought the Texas Chainsaw Massacre was real because of, like, you know, the opening credits and the little, you know, the words that come on the screen. But basically, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is an amalgamation of a lot of things. It's pretty much like if Ed Gein was
a nightmare.
It's pretty much like if Ed Gein was an active serial killer who wore the skin of the victims outside and wielded a chainsaw and murdered people.
And which went he didn't. After people.
Yeah, he pretty much just, he killed some people, but he more just robbed graves and made fucking furniture out of their skin and shit and
so
didn't
gross.
Really wear it outside or anything.
You know, ooh, like, no I love your jacket. Him. Is this leather?
Yeah, he's wearing it out. Oh no, it's marrow.
Oh my gosh, is this Native American?
It's Susan. So, the town that dreaded sundown, and this is more of a Texas massacre than the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is because it actually happened and it was in Texas. Ed Gein was not in Texas at all.
What's crazy is that this dude had a very short spree. It was only a few months when these things happened.
Yeah.
And
not long.
No more. But yeah, we'll talk about that. Kind of like what we did with the alien abduction movie. I forget the name of that movie.
Fire in the Sky.
Fire in the Sky.
So this movie was also an early example of a pretty cheap movie making some bucks with a budget of $400,000 back in the day. It made $5 million.
What? And it was released on Christmas Eve, I saw.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's crazy. This is not a Christmas Eve movie.
No. And the gore is actually, there's some genuine gore. Like, you don't see stabby stabby, but you see aftermath of gore, and yeah. It's pretty good. Like, you know, it's got your 70s slightly brighter, not very real looking blood, but I don't know if this was one of the movies.
Kool-Aid.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure I've mentioned it on this podcast before, or I guess this is a new one, but whatever. That the blood, if it was a couple of shades brighter, they could use way more of it. If it just looked slightly unrealistic, they could get away with using a lot of it. That's why more now you see dark blood that looks real, real. In movies and stuff. But yeah, we just get into the plot of what the movie is about. We get this very, very stark narration, like you're going to be watching some dead serious feature where they talk about World War II is, like, we're in the midst of World War II, right?
Yeah.
And Texarkana is a town that's kind of recovering from, like, an economic decline.
Right, and it's funny, I looked up a little bit about Texarkana, and it just seems like a normal town, because... Because of this, we find out a lot about Texarkana that I didn't even know, that it was actually a pretty rough area.
Yeah.
But as far as the economics of it, I looked it up because I was like, well, what made it so rough?
Yeah.
It really, I can't really find anything in the short, shallow Google searches that I did. It just seems like a normal town. It had a few plants and a few... like huge kind of companies that kind of kept it afloat and kept people with jobs, but nothing out of the ordinary. And I don't understand why it got so rough.
It got so violent. Different
demographics a little bit. But I mean, I don't know.
Even in the 40s and stuff? Race has anything
to do with it. Yeah. It was like 60% white. And then the rest were like minority.
So, for the 40s, or maybe, that's a little, it seems, I don't know.
I don't know, but we could get into how racism and demographics play into everything. I don't know what made it, but it seemed like it was a very, they called it the second, like a mini Chicago, right?
Oh yeah. That's what they were saying in the, we watched the fucking BuzzFeed Unsolved. We watched BuzzFeed Unsolved.
Fuck those BuzzFeed
Dude,
fucks.
They were making me laugh by the end and I was like, God damn it.
Yeah. I don't want to like this.
We did minimal research today. We watched, just like 3 million other people, BuzzFeed Unsolved, talking about the case. Just to kind of get a loose idea of the actual events. Mostly today we're going to be covering the movie and all of its classic, awesome 70s glory. The costumes are pretty good. You know, nobody looks very 70s in it, you know. It's got a timeless vibe. The town's kind of getting back to normal, the narrator tells us. Until Sunday night of March 3rd, 1946, when fake names Sandy Fuller and Linda May. What was her name? Mary Jean? Her name was like Mary Jean, the real girl.
The real girl? Her? Oh, man. And I clicked
Sammy
off.
Fuller and Linda May Jenkins were the kids in the movie. And they were they were parked on Lover's Lane. And even from this first story, it's totally different than what actually happened.
The first people were...
They, like, sort of do bizarro names. I remember, like, Linda May was, like, Mary Jean or something like that, right?
Oh, Jimmy Hollis, age 25, and his girlfriend, Mary Jean Larry.
Mary Jean Larry. 19. In the movie, Linda May Jenkins.
age 19.
So this was the first case in real life where, like... he came up to the door and the guy was like, we don't have any money. And then he pulls him out of the car, forces his pants down. Right.
Right.
And then hits his head so hard that she thought that the guy shot him. Right.
Yeah. But that was fucking in the documentary. Terrible. That didn't happen in the movie.
Yeah. That doesn't happen in the movie. That's what actually happened. Yeah.
Yeah. In the movie, you just see feet. You see these two lovers on this, you know, what lovers do
on a lover's, on a lover's rendezvous.
Yeah, they're out there, and for some reason he makes the odd. Well, I know why he did it, but he puts his head on her lap. He's trying to get her in the mood.
That's a weird move. You know, I noticed that. I was like, that's a weird move, like playing like baby.
Yeah.
Come on, you know what I want? I want what's under the cloth. I mean, lay on your lap. That's I don't.
I don't know, ladies, tweet us. That's not hot, right? That's not a thing.
It was like, you know, get your head out of my lap, please.
Get your head out of my lap. What are you, my fucking little brother? So basically in the movie, these fictional versions of these kids are parked at Lover's Lane. And then the hood, like, swings open, right?
Yeah, I guess, yeah. I don't know older cars, but usually newer cars, you pop them and they have a hood latch release. I don't know about these older, you know, cars in the 1940s. Do they just pop up
like yeah. that?
But it's funny because it shows him. It just shows this dude in this mask.
Yeah, he's, like, creeping along. And it's, like, the first time you see him and it's, like, not scary at all, right?
Not at all.
He's, like, crouching. Yeah, like he looks like a like when you play one of those like stealth video games and just like
it would have been way better if they had shown him like if you had just heard like crunching and seen shadows and then all of a sudden the hood pops open and then the hood drops and then yeah. you see his face.
I honestly think this director might be a little more skilled with the comedy parts.
Yeah.
You know, this, oh, I think sure. this direct, is it the same director that did the Bigfoot movie, the Boggy Creek movie?
He did Bigfoot too?
I don't know. No. I don't know.
Hold on.
It's either that or it's the same narrator that narrates The Legend of Boggy Creek. But I wanted to watch that movie for instead of Willow Creek, but we should try to find it. I could only find it Mystery Science Theater with like, it's on Netflix with Mystery Science Theater, but I want to like watch funny. It. And make fun of it on our own, you know? I don't want to, like...
Yeah, get material.
I think it might be the same narrator. Maybe not the same director.
Narrator.
It's called The Legend of Boggy Creek.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. I know what you're talking about. No, dude, same director.
Oh, dude, we got to watch that. Is he in it? I hope he's in it, too.
Oh, is he in it? And Boggy Creek has a sequel, Boggy Creek 2, and the legend continues.
we gotta seek it out. All right, so yeah, this guy swings the hood open after he's unscarily crouching. He's a man with a bag over his head, very much like
a bag of potatoes.
Very much like
potato sack.
Well, I was gonna say like the first appearance of the killer Jason in Friday the 13th Part 2.
Yeah,
where he has more of like a pillowcase over his head and he's wearing overalls. He's got holes cut out and he's got these piercing blue eyes. And I will say this off the top of the in the top of the episode, this guy does more with this like mask and breathing and his eyes
breathing.
Than I've seen in like most Jason and Mike Myers movies. Michael Myers, not the great
Mike Myers, Wayne's World.
They do this thing.
That's, the love guru.
Let's not mention the love guru. They do this thing where when he's breathing hard, you see see it. You see the mask poof up and then you suck into like the shape of his
it's
mouth.
Great.
And it's overdone, but it's effective. Yeah,
I loved it. I love that effect.
It is pretty good. And then what does he do? He like opens it up and he like sabotages the engine.
I don't know what he does, but they can't leave. He ends up breaking the glass.
Oh yeah, and then he can't start the engine.
Yeah, yeah. So then he takes the dude out, pulls him out. You see blood dripping from the what do you call it? From the broken glass of the windshield. And then he comes around on the other side and he tries to get the girl.
Well, you see him just kind of get in the car and then it kind of fades out, right?
Yeah.
Like maybe.
So you don't see. You don't see what happens to her, but you do in the next scene. You find a little bit of aftermath.
So like I said, what actually happened was this guy was killed, and he... actually, he wasn't killed. Oh, the guy who got his head hit so
hard...
No,
They
both survived. But, like, the weird thing is he forced the guy to take his pants down before he...
Right.
...banged him over the head. And then... I don't remember if she was sexually assaulted, but in the movie they stay away. They mention they mention rape in the movie. They don't say it, but they mention it. But they're like, no, they just say no.
None of the victims were, but in reality they were.
Yeah, they were. Maybe not all of them. You know, maybe he worked his way up, but I don't know the specifics. But he definitely raped the women. All right, so then we cut to daytime, and she's, the girl is, she drags herself to the road, and in a very, yeah, it's very bloody. She's got blood all over her face and arms and stuff. And the car, they have a lot of fun with these 40s cars, like slamming them on their brakes and drifting them. And
did you see that? He almost crashed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like, oh, jeepers. That's the best thing I come for the 1946.
That's a jeepers.
Jeepers. Oh, jeepers. Gee willikers, who's this? By George, there's a lady in the road.
Yeah, that's not something you see every day, especially on a desolate highway in Texarkana.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
The next scene was actually comical, but I don't think it was trying to be. So they her, right? The ambulance coming, like, down the road, like, the shot of the ambulance.
Oh, and he just, like, points, like, so many times? Like, is that what, like, you were talking
hurry
about?
Hurry up. But, yes, but the okay, so the shot is... It's showing everybody, like, the police are there and paramedics are coming down the street. But rather than showing them in the middle of the street, this director decides to show the entire ambulance ride from the end. So the shot is the camera's in the middle and it's got all the police and the sheriff deputies. And they're all there kind of around the area. It shows some paramedics putting her on a gurney. And then it shows, for some reason, another ambulance coming down the road. And it the director decided to show the entire shot from the end. Like, as soon as you see
the
ambulance
long.
Coming and you hear it. And it's goes on for way longer than it should. And I think the sheriff is trying, doesn't know what to do. So he keeps waving him down. If him waving is going to get them down there faster. It was very awkward and it was very noticeable and it lasted way too long.
Yeah.
But it was so funny to me because I was watching.
It's like, that's, cut this in half, guys. Well, you know, what's also, what I want to mention before we move on is, before we get the cops coming up on this girl, you know, still barely alive body, the credits are really, really nice. There's a sunset, dusk or dawn picture of the sun, probably dusk. The credit, like the actual title that says "The Town That Dreaded Sundown," is so cool. Like, it says the town is that. The town that dreaded sundown, and there's the sun going down. Like,
is it at the end of the movie?
No, it's right at the beginning. Like, right after the first kill, right before the someone comes across her body.
Oh yes,
it's the town that dreaded sundown, and then right next to it, like, is the sun setting.
Yeah,
and I always thought that was really cool.
And it's red. It's like super deep red. They got the color just right. It's perfect.
Yeah. See, like, there's things like that in this movie that are like, oh, this is good and visceral and it's really getting me. And then there's like weird, awkward cuts and stuff that doesn't work at all. And then it's baffling comedy the baffling comedy doesn't bother me. The kind of tone deafness between horror and comedy. Some people, that throws them off. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking more jarring. About, like, editing and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's very jarring, the cuts on these. It does feel like two different movies. I don't know what kind of the writers, what they were thinking. But it was like, let's throw these really funny scenes in here.
Yeah, or it could have just been, it was written one way. And when they got on set, they, like, really hammed it up.
Yeah.
You know, never know how it goes.
So yeah, they get her all taken to the hospital.
Yeah, and when the ambulance comes, finally it's a military ambulance, it looks like. And he tells them to go up the hill to the boy because the boy was still alive.
You're right. That's what the other ambulance was there for. I was like, why is this?
Maybe because it was like an off-road ambulance. I don't know.
Maybe four-wheel drive.
So then we meet Deputy Norman Ramsey, who's like a good old boy. And who you think is going to be, like, your main guy, but he's kind of not really.
Not at all. No. And I thought he was going to be, like, yeah. Let's catch this.
Yeah, he had some definite like Sheriff Hopper vibes. My favorite small town cop.
He could have carried this whole movie, but they decided against that for some reason. So
yeah.
Afterwards, he tells the military ambulance to go check on the mail, and then after he goes to his car and radios in to the other sheriff to meet him at the hospital because that sheriff wasn't on the scene.
So the sheriff tells him that Linda was not raped, but her back, stomach, and breasts were heavily bitten and chewed. And I think that's an actual, that's real.
Yeah.
Like, he bit these victims. Yeah, that's fucking weird. I don't know how true this is, but I think he did. I don't know if he raped the first victim.
Maybe no, he didn't.
He did?
I'm pretty sure he did. I think in that video we saw that he did.
I think he might have... I don't know. I also think he might have worked his way up to the rape stuff. Like, he was just murdering at first.
Now that you're mentioning, you might be right.
Yeah. No, sorry, we're not totally sure. But like we said, we're covering the movie. Yeah. Don't give a shit for our... I think it's kind of interesting to compare truth to fiction while we do this, but, like, don't hold us totally accountable. We watched the movie.
And then we watched a short 20-minute thing to kind of brush us up on the real thing. But that's all we did.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, don't at us.
As the James Bonding podcast always says, we're fans, not experts.
There you go. That's a perfect
But it's kind of weird. It doesn't work to be fans of the Phantom Killer who murdered helpless people in the 1940s.
We're definitely not a fan. We're not fans of this guy.
Fans of the movie. Fuck off. Okay. I'm fucking myself right now. Fucking.
Oh, man. So, yeah, they end up going... showing her at the hospital. They try talking to her. I think she's heavily sedated. And this is where it gets a little bit funny. They end up going and showing some scenes at the actual precinct. And this is when we're introduced to Mr. Sparkplug, I think. The director, Charles Pierce. After that, they go to the hospital and she's heavily sedated. And, you know, they just talk about some of her injuries. And then this is where they kind of go back to the precinct and start.
Even Wikipedia is like, these scenes are totally pointless.
They are, but they're so funny. We have to talk about them.
Yeah, so to me, it's my
favorite.
They go
back to the precinct and they go to Chief Sullivan. All the you know, officers are gathered around Chief Sullivan's office. And this is where we're introduced to our favorite comic relief in this movie, Sparkplug. And
yeah, he's the deputy who works the phones. He's terrible at his job, and he's played by our dear director, director of the film, Charles B. Pierce.
Yes. You did. Spot on. And
Charles B. Pierce.
It shows him first talking about, like, he's handling a call. There's a call that he gets, and he handles it not so well.
It's like a dog, like there's like a dog, and then he yells at the lady that like that he's gonna like kill her dog or do something to the dog if it does something, if it bites him or something, and then his boss, like right after he ends the call, is like, we do not threaten citizens.
Well, no, he tells him, he's all, Sparkplug, how long have you been here?
But it's also funny because it's like it's also a mislead because. He has that phone call and you think that he's kind of a stern, like commanding character.
Yeah.
And then he's immediately shat upon by his
superiors.
Yeah,
he's like, how long have you been on the force? He's all, 4 months, sir. He's all, God, it seems like it's been longer than that.
It seems so much longer. And it's like, dude, Charlie, did you write this? I don't know. It's just so funny that he... plays the silly ass character. Is he still alive?
I don't know. Maybe we can interview him. Yeah, I don't think he's doing anything else.
Oh man, I want to see everything he's done. So I have seen this movie before, but it was a long time ago, and I don't remember it being this much of a delight. Oh, man.
He died in 2010.
He probably had a long life.
Yeah. Well, he was born in 1938.
Yeah. Okay.
So he died at 71.
I would love to see everything that he did. He's so good at Sparkplug.
He just celebrated a birthday 3 days ago. We're recording this June 19th, by the way. His birthday was June 16th.
Oh, man. Spark plug day, June 16th. Mark your calendars.
It happens is he tells him first, he says, don't talk to anybody like that. Well, she calls back and he says, lock up that mangy dog because I'm on my way. He tells
her. Yeah. And then the guy just rolls his eyes can't change spark plug. Once a spark plug, always a spark plug. And then we get the actual cops talking and one of the other cops suggests to the chief to warn teens and college students not to park, as they call it, not to go on lonely roads because they'd be a murderer. But this was only the first case, right? So, and in real life, there was a lot of crime, so people weren't even freaked out because nobody died.
Yeah, they said that this really didn't cause any alarms because it was it's just another attack, whatever.
Yeah. But in the movie, the town is it's on the mend, and it's a little sweeter of a place.
Yeah.
So it's a little different. I mean, they're not able to get it like a warning out, right? Like everyone's still kind of not taking it that seriously.
Right.
But the town does seem way more idyllic and stuff like that.
So the next scene, this is where we're going to talk about some age difference, which it's a little weird. It's not too weird. The gap isn't too big. But it's a little bit, it's odd.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that's what I mentioned earlier, right? It's a 17-year-old girl and the guy's 29,
Yeah,
right?
He's 29.
I'm 29.
Yeah, so imagine you with a 17-year-old. What do you have in common with a 17-year-old right now?
Oh, my God. Oh, man. I don't play Fortnite. So the next scene is this crazy-ass scene that's supposed to take place during the nighttime, but it's clearly the day with a filter on.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so frustrating because, like, towards the end of the sequence, it's like they don't even give a shit.
No.
You know, they're just like, all right. Fuck, like, there's just shadows everywhere.
We know it's daytime. It's fine.
Yeah. Like, I'm watching it right now on the TV, and it's just like, there's shadows, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they do it in old James Bond movies and they do it in older movies where they just put a filter on like a dark and, you
trying
know,
to make it
like,
seem
okay,
like
it's nighttime.
This is the nighttime filter.
And it can work on certain times of the day, like right before the sun goes down.
This
and stuff,
is
and
clearly
still a little
not one
bit
of those
of
times. This is not one
of
those
no,
times.
Yeah, no, 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 no. But so this happens, in the movie time, like 2 weeks later. March 3rd is the first one. March 24th is the next one. So while investigating the Lover's Lane, while it's, like we said, it's raining super hard, Deputy Ramsey hears some guns, and then he finds Howard, who is the... They talk about how Howard is the 29-year-old.
Yes.
And Emma Lou Cook. These are the fake names.
Right.
The 17-year-old that they started dating.
The real names were Richard L. Griffin, age 29, and his girlfriend. They were only dating 6 weeks. Polly Ann Moore. She was 17.
That's so weird. So fake name. What'd you say? Howard? What's the guy's name?
Richard L. Griffin.
Howard W. Turner.
And Polly Ann. Polly Ann Moore.
Emma Lou Cook. Like, they do pretty good bizarro names. Polly Ann and Emma Lou. So, they find them tied to a tree, and Ramsey sees the spotted man escaping. Actually, you know what's funny is I didn't know if that was clear that he saw the guy.
In the movie, he sees him.
Yeah, yeah.
In real life, this didn't happen.
No. He wasn't just, like, investigating and hearing gunshots in real life. That's
right.
Bullshit. So he sees the guy get into the car and drive away in the car. So that's how they know it's, like, this black Chevy, right?
Yeah.
And then it cuts to our dear narrator telling us about how the town's selling out of guns and safety equipment. And guard dogs is a thing they don't mention in the movie.
Yeah.
But in real life, they, like, the pound and stuff was getting a lot of requests for big guard dogs. And even at the time, some of the people that worked for the pound were like, you know, we're in the business of giving pets, like, not protection, you know, if you're just going to keep them outside to bark.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the town was freaking out.
This scene is so funny with the with the rain and the nighttime.
Yeah, yeah. It's so day, and it just pisses me off. They're just like, it was raining the other night. And I'm just like, really? Like, I just kind of just figured it was, like, you know, sun going down type era. But no, they're really sticking to that being the nighttime.
They really are. So in real life, a passing motorist saw the parked car on the road and stopped. And he first thought that they were both asleep. And Griffin was found between the front seat with his knees and his head, like, resting across his hands.
Yeah. And she was in the back seat, right?
Yeah.
She had been raped. She had been raped for sure.
Face down in the back seat. And Griffin was shot twice in the head while he was still in the car. And then once in the back of the head. Both of them were shot in the back of the head. And fully clothed.
Yeah, and in the movie, Howard's dead in a ditch. And the corpse of his girlfriend is just tied to a tree, already dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that... In the movie, they kind of make that his MO. They kind of make it where he ties the women up on trees. Because he does that again in another scene.
Yeah, an insane scene.
Yeah.
So that's when they have to call in the big gun. The most legendary Texas Ranger of all. The Lone Wolf himself. Captain J.D. Morales.
Yeah. And the real Lone Wolf... His name was M.T. Gonzalez. No joke.
They really did just barely change the names. So after arriving, Morales explains that that he's taken over the investigation.
Boy, and he does. He knows his shit. This guy comes in, slams his dick on on the sheriff's desk, and he says, "All right, I'm leaving. Get me a car
and a driver.
Give me that deputy spark plug. I'm gonna get him to drive me around."
Yeah, yeah. Spark plug is so happy to drive him around, and he immediately forgets the keys.
Yeah, dude, this is such a comical scene.
Yeah, he's like all proud. He opens the car for the deputy and for the Lone Wolf. And then he sits down and realizes he forgot the keys. And then he goes back and, like, takes his desk drawer out and pulls it up and plops it upside down to look for the keys. And where his superior is just like, "What car are you looking for?" He's like, "7." And then he points out, he's like, "What's that right there?" And then there's just a bunch of key hooks with a big ass sign that says car keys. And the number 7's hanging right there. Very God, secure.
This guy's
very
a
secure
moron.
Texarkana police station. Very secure. Just car keys.
But it's funny because he checks even the deputy. Deputy Sparkplug checks the bottom, the upper tire. He like checks the wheel well.
On his way. Yeah, the first thing he does is like, check.
Yes, because that's exactly where deputies and sheriffs keep their car keys, is on the wheel well.
Oh man, yeah, and then And then, before he goes and grabs the keys, he says, "That's where I was going to check next, sir." And then he immediately, like, turns on his siren and goes super fast.
Yeah.
While we see this guy, you know, the Lone Wolf with his cigar, and then he's like, "Boy, unless it's an emergency, avoid the, you know, obey the laws of the road."
And he's like, "No need for, what does he say? No need for sirens and no need to... past red lights." He's like, "This isn't an emergency."
So this character that the director himself plays is just like,
oh dude, he's an idiot.
Yeah, it's just like over the top.
And he's so happy. Right. He's just happy to be away from his desk. He's actually away from desk duty.
Poor spark plug. He just wants to have something to do. He just wants to be a part of the team.
He just wants to be important, which is why he volunteers a little later.
Yeah. So the next attack, They've got it all worked out. They kind of figure out that he's attacking every 20 days or 19 days or around then. So this falls on the same day as the school prom. And if you thought this movie was silly before, we about to get super silly here, folks. So they set up decoys.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, when they find out, it's funny, the lone wolf is getting his haircut right. And he just walks away from the haircut in the middle of a haircut. He's like, oh, yeah, that'll do it. He never checks the mirror, never checks. I've never just gotten up from a haircut when the barber's cutting my hair. He's just like, all right, I know what you're thinking. Let's go set up a task force. That'll be it. And then he just gets up.
He's that confident.
Yeah, he's like, I make this hair look good. I don't need no stinking haircut.
The next attack day falls on the day of the high school prom.
Yeah.
And this is the insane fucking scene in this goddamn movie. It's, like, inappropriate, but, like, nicely handled in a weird way.
It's funny.
I don't know. Yeah. So they decide to set up decoys. Like, we're going to have all of the officers dress up as couples. In real life, the officers dressed up as a young couple.
Right.
So there was female and male officers. But this is a movie, and we have Spark Plug.
Yeah.
And he and some of the other officers.
He just wants to be important.
Yeah. He volunteers, and some of the other officers volunteer to be decoys. But they dress up as full-on women in transvestite regalia. God bless these queens.
None of these dudes look like teenagers. Not a one.
No. There's even like there's like a fat guy with like hairy legs, and he's like sucking on his cigar with his like red lipstick.
Yeah, that's so funny.
of course, our dear Spark Plug is dressed up like a woman, and he immediately gets shit for being for his boobs being different sizes.
Yeah.
And there's a scene I had to rewind two times and then put closed captions on. Is the cop with the handlebar mustache.
Dude.
Where he says, Sam, and I don't see, you know, I bet you, I wonder how I had to get that costume. We just had looked him back in his closet. So he said something along the lines like, I bet you he just had to look in his closet for his woman outfit.
Yeah.
Like, and he already had it. Was that joke. But it was so, like, southern drawl that I had to put on closed captions. I was like, what the fuck is this guy saying?
There was a couple times when I had to do that.
And then I was like, oh, it's offensive. Oh, okay. But
no, that's great.
I mean, seeing all these guys come out, all these guys dressed as women.
And then holding shotguns.
Yeah, they're all holding shotguns. Yeah, there you go. They're holding huge fucking shotguns.
What's even better is the next scene, the guy making fun of Sparkplug is his date. He's like the man in the car with him.
And this is where I change my mind a little and think that this scene is a little ahead of its time and kind of weirdly sweet, or maybe just accepting.
Yeah, it was a little.
Not that anybody's an actual transvestite in the scene, or, you know, not that anybody's a, you know, LGBTQ or anything like that. It's just, or I don't know. If anything, maybe the partner might be a little.
Maybe.
Because. But he's sitting there.
Yeah, he's getting a little frisky with him.
Yeah, when he's sitting there, you know, Spark Plug is like, you know, and, you know, oh, sure, laugh it up. And then he's like, oh, officer, we got to make.
We got to make, you know, this look real.
The chief, whatever, said, we got to make this look real. So he, like, puts his hand over his shoulder and he's like, what are you doing? And then he, like, grabs his shoulder. I mean, that's as much as it gets, but still.
He honks his fake breast.
Oh, yeah. And then right before the scene cuts, he honks one of the fake boobs. And, like, and Sparkplug is so startled and, like, you can see it in his face. Like, he's been violated. He turns his head and his wig falls off.
That's what it's like to be a woman, Sparkplug.
That's what it's like to, yeah. You know, I feel like there's truth in that.
Oh, for sure. And you ask any man, what would you do if you had boobs? Most of them would say, I'd play with them.
Mm.
But Spark Plug starts beating the deputy, whatever, the dude next to him.
Yeah, he starts smacking him, you know, oh, get off me. I'm dressed like a woman. I really do think that the deputy with the chubby guy with the handlebar mustache might be
he must have
part of
had
the LGBTQ
community. Yeah, he might have had a little bit of tendencies, man. Now that he's alone, he's kind of seeing, he's like, this guy's dressed up. He's not looking so bad.
Yeah.
Anyways, we cut to the prom. And in reality, this was not a prom. The prom is hilarious, too. This was not a prom. There was actually a nightclub that the kids went to. Where I don't even know if they were really kids, actually.
Because in the movie, it's a prom, and What's-Her-Face is the trombone player.
Dude.
But in real life, she was a saxophone player. Yeah. And
it's so funny. It's so funny. Because how would they know that the killer... maybe we'll talk about that when the scene comes. But, God, let's talk about the prom first.
Okay, so there's lots of people dancing, and, you know, it's all appropriate. And then you see all these, like, really young-looking kids in the band, and there's just, like, one pretty, like, adult lady playing trombone at the end. And then, there's like two, I guess, teachers.
Yeah, because I mean they're older girls.
Chaperones.
They can drink.
Right?
They're but
yeah.
They're
yeah, I don't know why it's so secretive.
They're not having fun. It's like they want a little bit of some booze to make it to liven up the chaperoning. And
yeah, so two of these teachers, one of them hands the other like a little bottle of liquor that's bright red, just like the punch.
Yeah,
and then she like very like
sneakily
pours it in her cup, and then she hands it to the other teacher, and the other teacher slowly raises her glass and looks around before she sips it and makes the funniest face.
Yeah.
Like a
rum punch.
Yeah. Like just she doesn't say the sound. She doesn't say ooh, but picture an old lady saying ooh while raising her eyebrows.
Yep.
And check my Instagram feed. No, I'm not going to post this episode for a while. So who knows?
Yeah.
I'll repost it. It's funny. And the prom is ridiculous. And then at the end, you see the trombone player get into or just leave with a boy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but it's funny that, I mean, they do this prayer scene because it's like they're trying to make it show that the town is scared, right? That they're like, keep us safe. Which is weird because they're at a prom and
the prayer scene. I don't remember. They had a prayer.
At the end of the prom, the I don't know. One of the faculty gets up and prays, and he says, "Keep us safe."
Way to like fucking kill the sexy mood.
Blah blah blah. Leave room for Jesus.
Like, yeah, make sure these kids don't go fuck on the hill.
And immediately
by
after
having a fucking boner killing prayer.
And immediately
at
after
the end of the prom,
it doesn't work. Immediately after the guy says, "You want to get out of here? Let's go park.
Let's go park.
Let's go fuck." I mean park. And then she says, "Well, no, we
in
can't."
In real life, this one is probably the one of the most sad ones because she was like only 14 and he was 15, right? Or no, 15 and 16.
Oh, really?
She was only 15 and he was 16. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that is sad.
I think that's this one, but I'm not sure because what happens in the movie versus what happens in real life is completely insane, especially because this murder is insane.
Yeah.
In the movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She was 15.
So in the movie, it's crazy. They go and park, and then we see him doing his little sneaky, like, I'm playing Metal Gear Solid thing
15,
behind the car.
16.
And then he, like, jumps.
Did you say she's playing Metal Gear Solid? The guy
yeah,
with
he's
the
like,
killer?
He's, like, sneaking behind the car, and you know, she's scared because of what's going on, right? She's like, I know what's going on. And then before they get too frisky, she's like, take me home. And they're actually going when he's doing his little parkour behind the car.
Mm-hmm.
And then he grabs, like, or just reaches in the open window and starts, like, punching. And then the door opens, so we have the killer hanging onto a swinging front car door.
Yes, it's
while
very,
the car's driving.
It's very Fast and Furious.
It's very, like, insane. Yeah, what the fuck is this action movie? None of that happened. And then he finally pulls out the driver, the boy, and fucks him up real good, right? I don't know what he does. He like, bashes his head, and his head's all bloody. And then the girl crashes into some bushes because there's no driver in the car.
Yeah, in real life, he was shot 4 times. Once through the nose, and again through the left 4th rib from behind. A 3rd time in his right hand. And finally, he was shot through the back of the neck. 2 miles away.
So he definitely died.
Yeah. Yeah, she was found 2 miles away behind a tree. She was fully clothed. And she was shot twice. Once through the chest and once through the face.
She had her saxophone on her, right? And it was like discarded and they found it like way later in the woods.
Yes, they found it 6 months later.
There was one random lead. This is the real in real life. There was one random lead of somebody going up to a pawn shop and asking how much they would pay for a saxophone that matched the description. Mm-hmm. And then he never came back. And then they just found the saxophone in the woods.
Mm, so you think he was...
Some people think that lead is nothing, you know, because the saxophone was probably obviously just ditched in the woods right after the murder.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the movie, it's a little different. So Paul gets taken out pretty quick and a chase ensues through the brush because the car crashes into the brush and the murderer chases her through the woods and she gets caught by him pretty quick. And then she gets tied up to the tree, right?
Oh, yeah. This is what I thought was kind of crazy. Because in the movie, it shows, you know...
It's a fucked up good scene. I like this scene in the movie, but it's not.
In the movie, she's a trombone player. She really plays a saxophone in real life.
Yeah.
But it and shows
we'll, and,
him...
And we'll get in and it we'll understand why...
Yeah.
And they made the trombone choice, I think, right?
It shows him... tying the knife to the end of a trombone after he had already tied her up. And you're like, what the fuck? And it shows him practicing. He's not blowing in it because he's got the mask.
Well, at first he blows into it, right?
Right. Well, no, he blows into it the whole time, but no sound comes out because he's got the mask.
Well, the first time he blows into it, there's sound.
Was there? I don't remember if there was sound.
Yeah, that's why the other part kind of confused me.
Well, I'm like, what is he doing? So at first I was like, what is that? Because the scene's dark. And it's, you know, it's in this movie was shot in the 70s. So you can't really tell.
Yeah, this one was actually filmed at night. Good job, guys.
Yeah, so you can't really
tell. We can tell what's going on. I mean, enough. Yeah.
But I'm like, what did he get out? At first I thought it was a chainsaw. And then I was like, oh, no, that's an instrument. But yeah, he uses it.
He has like this leather strap to where he ties the knife to the end of like the, you know, a trombone is the one you kind of push in and out.
Yeah.
And he uses it. If you can't picture what it is.
And he uses it to stab her in the back several times.
Yeah. So he blows in it. And like we said earlier, his mask like inflates and then he sucks the air in and it deflates and I think this is the scene where
you notice more his eyes and you notice more of the mask because it's so dark and his eyes are so blue.
And the guy who plays him, who's a stunt double who worked on a lot of classic movies, has these striking blue eyes. I don't know if it's contacts, but he has these striking blue eyes. It's weird. He like makes this thing, he ties this thing up. But well, before he does the whole trombone thing, the boyfriend actually does kind of like start crawling around, right?
What a fucking asshole, though! I forgot about that. She tells him to run away, and rather than try to save her life, he fucking runs away.
He doesn't. He tries to.
No,
he tries really hard to run away.
Yeah, but
I mean, he's already so fucked up because he was shot. Yeah, and so and she's like, "Get out of here! Go out of here!" And her acting in this scene is not good, but it must have been awkward because she's like, there's parts where she's just like, please don't hurt me. Please don't hurt me. Like it's that, like I'm doing the exact line reading. She says the line so much and over that there's a weird realism to it. So I don't know.
Yeah. She says, God, no, God, no.
It's interesting.
In the movie, they don't say whether they find the instrument.
No, they don't mention anything else about the instrument.
I guess they do, but because they do talk about later. About how he used the trombone to kill her, and now it's kind of fucked up.
Yeah. So before he stabs her, he kind of tests out his little doohickey with the knife attached to the end of the trombone. And yeah, he does that weird, like, blowing into cloth thing that.
God.
And it's And it's he so overdoes it. The actor over, like, he really fucking overdoes it. Like, in a good way. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's very effective.
Yeah, totally.
Anyways, Roy, pussy boy Roy, runs off in the middle of this, and he ends up getting shot. Homeboy gets shot, like, trying to escape.
Oh, even before she gets stabbed, he's dead, yeah. And then when he actually blows the trombone, it's pretty intense. It's pretty fucking intense.
Oh, no, it is.
I mean, it is corny, and the sound just sounds like a boop, boop. Like, when the stabbing just kind of sounds like a...
Yeah, and she's not... I don't know if she's screaming the way a person being stabbed would scream.
Yeah. But that there's a shot of her, like, you know, glove that goes all the way up to her elbow.
Yeah.
Like, that's tied around, and it's kind of just, like, losing life that's weirdly creepy.
He gets the trombone. He's like, what is this? What is he doing? He decides just, I'm gonna make this tool.
So in real life, nobody was murdered with any sort of brass instrument whatsoever. They did find her saxophone in the woods a lot later, but it was a part of the investigation. It was a mystery. It was a what happened to the saxophone that we know she had with her. I think one of her friends said that she had the saxophone when she left, or something like that. I don't know, something like that.
This dude is murdering her, and he's straight up like this. Like, his eyes are so big.
But his body, too. Like, he uses his shoulders.
And then the whole mask. This... I'm watching it over again. It doesn't just do this. It puffs out like this.
It inflates and then constricts.
It is so good.
And it's his whole physical performance. It actually is pretty good. It's pretty unnerving.
Anyways, yeah, the next morning, the deputies show up and they find the trombone. And they find the remains of both of the victims.
They find the trombone. I don't remember them finding the trombone.
Yeah, I just saw he's holding the trombone. Like, not even, like, using gloves. He's just yielding. The officer's just yielding the trombone.
It's the 40s. That makes sense.
Holding it all willy-nilly.
This movie was made in 1973 when cops were still being befuddled by terrible serial killers committing obvious crimes. Also, it's another thing I want to mention, too, is that, damn, this fool sucked at killing people in real life, especially.
Yeah.
He was a terrible shot. He was bad. He was bad at his duty. He was bad at what he was doing. He was a bad serial killer.
If you're going to be a serial killer, do it right.
It's insane that he never got caught.
It makes me wonder, like, you know, all these serial killers that came out, like, in the 70s. Some of them in the late 60s, like, what happened? Like, were people really killing people before and they just didn't put them together? Was it just, like, people were more organized around this time to where they could, like, oh, this is the same dude? And, like, all these other murders just went unsolved?
Yeah. I mean, shit, it happened a lot back then.
But isn't it crazy? Like, it happened a lot. That's when, like, serial killers became a thing.
I mean, that's the thing. I think we've talked about it before. The whole people saying that America has the most serial killers, but it's also like, well, there's a lot of America and everybody pretty much has a competent system. Like, yeah. I think we're just finding more serial killers.
Yeah. We're just better at finding them.
Also, I think Germany, is it Germany or Russia? I think it's Germany that has a lot of serial killers, but they're just saying that they have a really, really, really good police system, the way they figure shit out.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily that there's more serial killers. It's just
they're better at, like...
Yeah, they catch more of them.
It's crazy. Yeah, we did talk about that. I forgot.
So the next part in the movie is these authority figures meeting for a steak dinner.
I like this scene.
And this is where we meet psychiatrist Dr. Kress, whose real name was probably Dr. Hess or Dr. Jess or something.
Yeah, it doesn't say.
There is truth in this scene. I don't think they were all eating a fancy steak dinner. But basically, this guy is meeting the officers to tell them what his psychological evaluation of the suspect might be.
Yeah, he's profiling him, basically.
Yeah, he's profiling him. There you go. Whether or not they met for dinner and he was like, you guys already ordered? All right, medium rare steak.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Let me get into it.
His profile was basically that the Phantom is highly intelligent. He's a sadist. He's got a strong sex drive. He's between the ages of 35 and 40. That one I have more questions on. That's specific. That's only 5 years. The doctor also pretty much tells them that there's no chance they're going to catch him. Like he's pretty confident that this guy is smarter than them and ahead of them.
That was very interesting.
And it's like, is that just kind of a story thing, you know, to kind of allude to the ultimate, you know, the ending? Or is that just, you know, is that like something that the doctor actually said? Like, if you guys capture him, and that's another thing that's repeated in the movie later. It's like, if you know, if you guys capture him, it's going to be like pure luck or something like that.
Yeah, possibly they could just be alluding to, hey, we never caught this guy. What I do like about this scene, though, is have you ever seen the movie Duel about that crazy truck driver? You never see the truck driver's face. So Duel is about...
Duel? Is that the Steven Spielberg movie?
I think it's a Steven Spielberg movie. So what? The premise of Duel is...
I've never seen Duel. It was like a TV movie, right?
My mom showed it to me one day, and she's like, you need to watch this movie. And I was like, wow, I was fascinated.
Sorry to cut you off, but that's so weird because my mom was talking about Duel the other day.
Really?
And I feel like she forgot about it. Like, she heard about it on one of, like, a radio or whatever she listens to. She, like, listens to Coast to Coast a lot. And she was like, yeah, you ever seen Duel, Steven Spielberg? And I was like, no. And then she was like, I feel like somebody reminded her of it. Like, she had never.
And she showed it to me when I was young. She showed it to me when I was so young.
I've never seen that. I know it's early a good Spielberg movie. Yeah, I've never seen it. And I love Spielberg.
What I loved about it was it's very, they took, you could tell this guy watched this. He was heavy into it because they never show the killer's face, right? And in this movie, they never show the killer's face.
So Duel's like.
Duel is a very psychological thriller.
It's like it's a fucking like, slasher on wheels, like Death Proof, dude, or what?
You'd love it because it just doesn't make sense. It just, this guy is driving on this road and he pisses off a semi-truck driver. And the entire movie is this crazy ass semi-truck driver and him having this fucking road rage. And he stops off and has food and you only see the dude's boots. This is very like this movie. So you only see you know when it's the killer because you see his boots. And so this scene shows they're eating steak and the killer walks up and shows his shoes. And like it's been showing the entire time. Shows him in the mud, you know, getting dirty.
Dude, I need to see Duel.
It's good. You'd like it. I'm surprised. And then it's great because the resolution at the end, it's just great. I liked it.
I'm sure.
I'm not going to give it away. But
I'm sure you've seen Death Proof, right?
Of course. Yes, of course I've seen Death Proof. This is a lot like tamer. This is more like reality. This is just like, I just pissed some dude off and he's trying to run me off the road, kind of. And it's just about road rage. That's all it's about.
I need to see that.
It's good. You never see the killer's face. It's just very eerie. Like, he's always around and you know because his shoes.
Dude.
And I think it's great. We were talking about this weird side story, right? And this could completely be cut out of the movie. I don't know why they did it. Well, I guess they did it to fill time. Well, we get this gentleman.
Oh, because this was real. The African-American guy who talks about this dude who, like, threatened him and said that, like, he's like, I already killed 5 people in Texarkana. Like, what's another one?
So this really happened? This actual part
really happened? Mm-hmm.
Well, this guy comes in and he like weaves this story and tells the investigators that, you know, he picked up this dude and he confessed in his car while he's driving him. And in the movie, he tells him that he's going to drive. The guy asked him to give him a ride just 2 miles up the road. So I think the guy gives him gas money, right? He gives him like $1 for gas.
Yeah, something like that.
And he ends up saying that he needs a ride to his car, but he ends up driving like 8 miles. And tells him, he's like, hey, man, I can't get back. Like, I know you gave me money, but this ain't going to cover it. And the guy says,
what makes you think you're going to get back?
Yeah, so he says he asks for his car, his wallet. The guy gives him the wallet. He says, which, yeah, it gets us crazy. He shows him, he says, if you, I know where you live, I know what kind of car you drive. If I ever see you,
I know, or if you ever tell the police,
yeah, if you ever tell the police, I'm coming after you. And he says, I've never been scared in my life, and this guy scared me.
He's never been scared ever? Not even as like a boy?
That's what he says. I've never been scared in my life.
And he's scared now. And so Lone Star Deputy TJ. TJ
Hooker.
TJ Hernandez, whatever.
And this is a funny scene too.
I want to see how many first letter initials with Hispanic last names we can come up with right now.
Dominguez.
CJ Dominguez.
Ramirez.
TZ Ramirez.
Sanchez.
HJ Sanchez.
Gomez.
BJ Gomez.
BJ Gomez is my favorite. Now I'm on the spot.
TZ Carmona.
Castro.
CT Castro. TC Castillo.
Benavides.
Oh, yeah. DB Benavides. That's just Dan. Wait, don't you have a middle name?
Daniel.
Edie Dominguez.
I love it. So anyways, this next scene is pretty comical too. So they get a call for a dude who stole some shit, right? At a convenience store. And the cops are on it. They end up going on a wild police chase. And fucking Deputy Sparkplug dips the car in the fucking swamp. You don't remember that?
Oh, shit. Okay. Like, once again, this whole comical side story of like an ineffectual, not ineffectual. Is that right? Ineffectual.
It's cop. It's very like Barney Fife. Like just like,
or a little bit of J.W. Pepper from the James Bond movies.
I shouldn't be a cop, but I am. They let me drive this car and I'm going to drive it in the swamp.
Yeah. So everybody comes to, they're stopping this guy who matches the description that the African-American dude said. Okay, there's like a guy who I gave him a ride and he said he was going to kill me. So they stop this guy and everybody, like, it's like kind of like that scene at the beginning. Like, one by one, you see these cops pull up and you hear their sirens. And then, of course, Deputy Sparkplug with the fucking lone wolf in tow and also the deputy. Like, he just runs off the road and into a swamp, and the car just starts sinking, and everyone's just like, oh, spark plug. And then by the end of the scene, he's getting into another car to drive it.
And then he's like, nope.
And the lone wolf is like, yeah, I'm not driving with him again.
I'm not driving with you anymore.
And it's funny, but it's also like, why are we giving this guy another car? I don't know.
Yeah. Why are they letting this guy drive? Anyways, so this dude that they were chasing, they think he's a suspect for the
murders. He admits to a lot of,
and he
this
does.
This is real. A lot of people,
that's so weird.
A lot of people admitted to, like, they took credit for these crimes. It's weird.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
The 40s were a different time. I guess they wanted notoriety, or maybe some of these people were already in jail, but there was a lot of
Didn't
weird
Texas
tips.
Practice the death penalty back then?
I think so. We still do, baby.
That's so weird. Well, no, I know that, but I mean, gee whiz. Anyways, that dude shows up and he's like, that's him. That's that dude. He gave me a dollar and he took my money.
Yeah, he was like, money. You owe me a dollar.
Well, again, going back to the gay deputy sheriff, he asks if he can ride in the back seat with this gentleman, this racist asshole.
Oh, yeah. LGBTQ.
Handlebar mustache guy. He says, well, if you don't mind, sir, I'd like to ride in the back seat with him the entire time.
Yeah. And then he's like, I think that'll be okay. And then he's real excited. Like, I feel like he's a tough cop. Like, he's going to beat him up because he's a bad, bad boy.
But
at the same time, maybe he just wants to beat that sweet meat. Sorry.
He also
I had to
grabs him,
the alliteration.
He also grabs him by the belt. If you notice in the movie, he grabs him when he's pulling him. He grabs him by the belt.
He was a rather handsome fellow.
Yeah.
Oh, another thing that I wanted to mention while I was watching this movie. Okay, I know they don't go into a lot of the investigation, but doesn't it seem like there's a lot of people that the lone wolf is just like, that's not the killer. Nope, that's not the killer.
Yeah.
It's just like, I think you're letting a lot of people go due to your, like, lone wolf hunches or...
Yeah, your gut.
Like, he's just immediately like, no, he ain't the killer. I mean, the guy said he came from New Orleans that day, but, I mean, whatever.
Yeah, he doesn't believe that he did it.
When he put him in the car, I was immediately like, oh, he's too short, but...
And this is where we see some...
Yeah.
Some definite child pornography dong.
Yeah, there's children on, like, what are they called? Tire swings?
Tire swing.
There's just narration saying that, oh, it's summer and the town's chilling and it's good. And so there's, like, these two boys on tire swings with their, they butt naked. The first shot is very far away. And
I thought they had... like trunks on.
Yeah, yeah. Like I did.
Boxers?
I did too. And then the second shot you see is a kid and you just see.
Butt ass naked.
Yeah, you just see like the white like shorts mark. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Where he has like some tan line, some sweet, sweet tan line.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, that's the 40s. That's not weird.
They're basically showing all this to show that the town's calmed down a little bit. People aren't as frantic. People aren't buying guns anymore.
Yeah. There's two unattended children swinging on a tire swing in a lake, you know.
By the way, they have no clothes on.
That implies that everybody's safe.
Yeah, so they show this woman leaving a grocery store, and she's getting helped out by one of the bagger boys. What do you call him? Bag boy?
Bag boy.
He helps load her groceries in, and she's driving a sweet, sweet red, whatever kind of car it was.
Sweet, sweet red one. It's the 40s. Sweet, not sweet that red many. One.
It's, yeah, all the up until this point, all the other ones were like black or green or mint. This is red. Sexy red.
Like, okay, so tell me if I'm wrong. Every car in this movie is the exact same with a different paint job.
Yeah, no, it looks like that. Some sort of Ford, I'm sure.
Yeah, some like 140s car they got.
And just got a whole lot of them.
I don't even think we talked about that like insane drift sequence when the deputy is hearing the gunshots like in the beginning of the film in that terrible daylight fake night scene. Like
there's some sweet sweet drifting.
As Joe Bob would say. There are definitely, I would say there's drifting foo and 40s car foo for sure.
Yep.
Yeah. And then there's even a couple of like slow shots of cars driving down the road. And it's like, it's not as cool as you think it looks. I don't think there.
Yeah, no, that's a weird directorial choice. Yeah. I didn't understand. That looks like some amateur bullshit, but whatever. I'll allow it, I guess. I mean, come on, for God's sake, we have crazy comedy that shouldn't be in this movie, but it is.
Yeah. And the music sometimes just goes straight up like...
Like super so silly. Yeah. Like, what's that theme song? The theme, Benny Hill.
Yeah.
Like, but this is the next scene that terrifies me. So this guy... It seems like it's a crime of opportunity this time where he sees this woman, he's attracted to her, and then he starts following her home, and she comes home and I guess stalks her the entire evening because it shows her getting ready for bed. Her husband is in the living room reading his newspaper, and she's like, do you hear something? Do you hear somebody outside? He's like, nah.
Did you break something?
So. Yeah. And she fucking gets shot through his window, and that's fucking terrifying to me. That's always my biggest fear. Some shit happening through my window while I'm inside.
Well, there's interesting things about this. A lot of people think this was not actually... So this did sort of happen in real life. A lot of people think this is not an actual murder by the the same guy who did the killings of the kids up at the Lover's Row. It was a different gun. It was like a 22 rather than a 34, I believe.
That's right. Yeah.
It was just weird that he shot somebody inside their house.
Yeah.
The movie makes it clear that it is definitely the same. Our same guy.
Him. They show his mask. Well, they don't show him. They show the mask and they show that he's.
But interestingly enough, there is a reason to believe that this might be connected because this murder was committed very close to one of the investigators' home.
Mm.
Like somebody that was.
I didn't know that.
Somebody that was close to. The case lived very close to this. That could just be a coincidence, and Texarkana was pretty murdery at the time.
There was a lot of murder?
Yeah. Some people think that this is not the same guy. I mean, Texarkana is not that big, so there could be coincidences like that.
Well, she ends up living, right?
This scene is the most intense in the whole fucking film, and we're getting towards the end here, but... Yeah, he gets shot a couple times, and he's struggling for a little bit. And when she notices him, then she like reaches for the phone, but he's like breaking his way in. When he like shoots her in the face, like
twice,
through the cheek.
He
shoots her through the cheek first, and then you see her like struggling, and then you see like kind of blood like skip off of the top of her head, and I thought she was just shot in the head.
Dude, I thought she was so dead. I thought she was like really, really dead.
She was still going. Apparently, in real life, when they found her, the bullet was lodged right under her tongue.
Under her tongue, yeah.
Oh, fuck. It's so crazy. This really is, like, the movie, for all its hoo-ha and fun Benny Hill-like comedy, this scene is, it's pretty visceral, and it's like, it's like a really good, it's like it's from a really good Friday the 13th movie.
Yeah, and he's just chasing her through the. She's trying to get to some sort of shelter, and he's just following her. He ends up finding one of her shoes.
Yeah, this is it's a long scene, and it's relentless. And I really do think that this guy that played the Phantom Killer is
so
like,
good.
It's a performance. You know, some people they like. You know, everyone's like everybody likes their own like Kane Hodder, and I mean, for my money, the weirdest Walker. The great Nick Castle, who played Michael Myers in the original Halloween movie, and who's just John Carpenter's friend from film school. And he directed some cool ass fucking movies. We just Googled him.
Yeah. Reprised his role again in the 2018 version of Halloween.
Yeah, but not I don't know where he actually is. Because he's barely there. He's kind of got a gut now. So I feel I feel like he was more of like a supervisor. Maybe they used him from behind a couple of times. But yeah, I love that new Halloween movie. And
he's got that dad bod.
The guy who played him is
dad
a stunt
bod
double.
Hard.
Yeah, but fucking the guy. Okay, Nick Castle, he was just hanging out on the set and they were like, put on the mask, Nick, and you can be Mike Myers. He directed such films as. The Last Starfighter, which is an amazing ripoff of Star Wars. Probably the best. Have you ever seen Last Starfighter?
No, never.
The Last Starfighter is about the kid who is really good at this arcade game, and they like call him up to like save the galaxy. You never seen it? He like lives in a trailer park. Oh, yeah, dude. It's dope.
Never.
It's dope. It's the most successful Star Wars ripoff. And then he also did fucking Dennis the Menace, which is a delightful movie with Walter Matthau. And the one kid
Apple.
Who was only in Rushmore after that, I guess. And then fucking Major Payne, which is kind of a...
Major Payne.
That was kind of a big part of my childhood.
I like that movie.
We had a cool, hip teenage babysitter who let us watch Major Payne all the time. We used to quote it as like really little kids because our cool, hip 90s babysitter would let us watch it.
That's funny.
But that's interesting. Sorry, Shinfo. Okay, wait. Okay. But anyway, yeah, we were just talking about great performances by people just wearing masks. And it's just in the way you look and the way you present your body. And in this one, the way you breathe and the way your eyes beam bright blue. He does have crazy blue eyes.
Crazy blue eyes. After this scene, he chases her to, I'm assuming, one of the neighbors. She crawls her way over there.
And oh, yeah, the old people come out and inspect.
Yeah, she had been banging on the windows and just trying to get some attention over here. And he comes out with a shotgun, kind of basically saves her life, not realizing what he's doing. I don't think he ever sees the dude in the mask. But the guy in the mask definitely sees him because he's hiding in the shadows.
Yeah, well, it seemed like he would have been like, fuck it. But then the wife came out and then he kind of disappears.
Yeah. Dude, I thought he was going to kill the dog. I thought for sure. I was like, don't kill that dog. Do not kill that dog.
I'm trying to think. Did he kill dogs? Oh, no. I was just listening to that.
Man in the Window.
Yeah, the Man in the Window, that podcast about the Golden State Killer. He killed some dogs, asshole.
I know. The old couple basically saves this woman's life, and the narrator chimes in and says that she ends up living. She ended up recovering. The killer backed off, and I believe this was his last attempt at murdering that they give him credit for. The real killer, anyway.
Yeah, and the narrator also chimes in about how people are terrified, just like Eli still is to this day, of being in front of their windows after nightfall.
Dude, I am, because I can't see out there.
You know what's kind of funny? And this has nothing to do with this, but there's two windows like on the side of the front doors to our house. And the blinds are totally fucked. So people, like, my mom was saying, like, you need blinds. Like, when I pull up, I can just see you sitting on your couch watching TV. And the other day, I just got a fucking towel and just put it over that. Just the one window, just on that side where you can just see me all the time.
Yeah.
Because the other window, you just see the garage door. You can't see shit. And it's like a bad angle. But I was like, I don't like that. I can never avoid somebody either if someone just knocks on the door.
Yeah, you're like, I'm not home.
Yeah.
You're home, bitch. I see you playing video games.
Yeah. I mean, they could go around the side and look into the other window. Yeah, I don't know. It's fine. I'm an open book. Come over. Message me on Instagram. I'll give you the address if you're in town.
He will. He really will.
Yeah.
Anyways.
If you want to sit and watch Unsolved Mysteries with me, let me know. You could be on the podcast.
Drink some Lone Stars and some PBRs.
Well, it's High Life tonight, but I have some. I have commemorative glasses right now. I'm drinking out of a Halloween cup. Speaking of that movie, the new Halloween movie, got Jamie Lee Curtis right here with her shotgun as a PTSD victim of the terrible crimes that happened to her in the first film.
Yeah. So, anyways, they credit this as the last kind of attempt at killing for this murderer.
Yeah, well, see, that's the... Because... the shot through the window and chasing the lady down, we don't know if that was actually him.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that it was.
And that's when it ends. But it also, I don't know, it seems like he could have just been escalating.
Could be. Trying something new, and he's like, this isn't working.
And just the way he shot these people so many times and didn't kill them, like, it's his MO, right? He's terrible at killing people.
Isn't that crazy? Was it his gun? Does his gun just suck?
I don't know. He sucks. Either way, for murdering people anyway, that's a kind of sucky thing, don't you think?
Yeah. Anyways, in the movie, they say that the bullets do match. And that's why they say that it confirms that he's a killer. But in real life, the guns were not a match. The ballistics and stuff.
So these guys are at a loss. They're just like, fuck this. We don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And then they get a call on the radio.
Well, he's behind. They say that the killer's behind schedule. Because up until this point in the movie, the killer has been striking.
Like every 19 to like 21 days or something like that.
3 weeks or so. Yeah. And that's when they get a call.
So this last part is complete and utter bullshit, right? I don't think none of this happened.
Fucking, they farted this scene.
They farted this one out in the writer's room, writer room, because it was just one guy in his fucking kitchen. They farted this part out. Farted?
They did.
So they get a report that there's... stolen car matches the one from the Turner and Cook murders, eh? It's like a 38 black Chevy, something like that. So they get there and a cop's like, another cop's there, somebody's there. And they're like, do people go hanging out up there, Lover's Lane? And he's like, not lately. So they go up there and they catch a glimpse of the killer just like perching on a cliff for some reason.
Yeah, for some odd reason.
And they shoot him chilling. And he notices. He makes a head jerky movement and notices. And then he runs into the nearby shrubbery, the bush, if you're in Australia. And then in the epic, like, third act, getting away at the last minute, there's a train coming. And the Phantom, with his long legs, he's really skinny. You see those skinny legs all the time in the movie.
Yeah.
Tall, skinny guy. He jumps in front of the train just in time. But he's limping, man. He's tired. And these guys, fucking Lone Star, Lone Wolf, whatever, and Deputy Bobby Briggs, they're just shooting through the bottom of a fucking moving train.
Yeah, nothing lands.
I ain't no engineer, or I don't know shit about trains or guns really, but it seems like a bad idea.
Holy shit.
But I do want to say that scene where they do shoot him in the leg is very cool. That stunt double, because the guy is a stunt double who plays him.
Holy shit. You're not going to believe what I just saw.
What?
Look at this.
Oh, shit. What scene is that?
Where they're shooting under the train.
Oh, my God, Eli. Oh, my God. That's
pretty... Look at that.
He looks pretty comfortable.
Yeah, he does. I don't know why he's shirtless.
Yeah, dude. Oh, my God.
He's holding a fucking camera. Okay, sorry.
For the audience, Eli found a great screenshot of these guys shooting right under the train, and there's a cameraman clearly on the moving train without his shirt because it was a hot day out there in Texarkana.
Probably.
And he's just... Damn. They missed it.
Dude, I can't believe I just saw that.
Dude, I never catch shit like that. Like, you know...
I don't either.
You go on IMDb and it's always there. That's amazing. You got to send me that screenshot. Yeah, I never catch that shit myself. Like those nerds who were like, water bottle in Westeros, I'm fucking pissed. Rewrite the whole fucking season. Did we mention when they're eating their steak dinner and talking about the guy's psychological profile that we see his infamous boots?
Yeah. That's where I brought up Duel.
Yeah.
That's why I brought it up, because we were at that scene and I was like, oh yeah.
Wow, dude, that guy is in a lot of, he's in a lot of frames. There's just a guy on the train.
Yeah, he is.
Dude, I'm trying to see if we even see his angle of the moving train, of a camera on a
moving train. No, they never show that. It's just, they never use that footage.
So they're shooting under the train and there's clearly a guy there. It's pretty great. But I really do think the effect of when they actually shoot. So Lone Wolf, our Texas Ranger, nicks him in the leg. And this guy's a stunt double, so he kicks his leg out from under him. And it really kind of, it looks like he got shot in the leg. It looks kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, the train moves by and there's not that much train left. But our Phantom Killer is nowhere to be found. It's probably 10 minutes ahead of us. That doesn't even make sense. Poor deputy's like, dang, I think he's done it again. Yeah. Outwitted by a fucking moron. And for some reason, there was some guy with a camera videotaping the whole thing. Yeah, so then there's that little scene where they're like, let's call the bloodhounds because we have a little bit of blood, but there's nothing. They can't find shit. The scent ends at the swamp, and then the end of the movie is like, some people think he disappeared in the swamp and he's just a swamp man and he's just a swamp guy now.
Yeah,
but we all know that is a load of shit. There's actually a lot of rumors as to what actually happened in real life, who this killer was, but the movie, you know, we get the bloodhounds chasing him and they just lose the scent. The last scene that I actually do think is kind of cool and kind of meta,
I think, especially so too, for its
time. So we see what current day Texarkana, right?
Right.
We see current-day Texarkana, and we see people in their 70s garb waiting outside to see the town that dreaded sundown, right?
On Christmas. It even shows it on Christmas. Like, they're outside, there's a Santa.
Oh, there's... I didn't notice that.
Yeah, dude, it was all decorated, all Christmas. They had the garland all over the awning.
And then what do we see, Eli?
And you see his fucking shoes.
You see those shoes, the skinny legs.
The fucking shoes from Duel. The same truck driver.
And he's going in to enjoy this movie.
Yeah.
Just like the rest of us.
Just like the rest. He's still out
there.
And
that's what scared
those
people.
He's walking free.
And that's the scariest thing, right? That this guy just got away with it.
That would be scary, actually.
Can we talk about how people think he's a Zodiac? We already talked about that at the beginning.
Yeah, a little bit. They say there's differences. Their height was not the same.
Didn't the Zodiac bite some people? Or is that? Or am I thinking of Golden State?
I think
Golden State bit some people,
Golden
didn't he?
Golden State bit people. I don't think this guy bit people, but... Well,
Texarkana did.
Yeah, yeah. I'm saying I don't think Zodiac killed people or bit people. There's some differences as far as height. They're like a foot off. I think they say the Texarkana guy was like 6 foot or something like that. And I think Zodiac, they say, was a lot taller than that. But, you know, who knows? The one suspect that they do have is a guy named Yul Sweeney. And
well, before Yul, let's talk about that kid. I don't remember his name.
Oh, the one that worked at the movie theater.
Yeah, he worked at the movie theater where a lot of the couples went before they died. He was in band with the saxophone girl.
Yeah.
And he had some connections to the other guys. And he killed himself, and in his letter he said he admitted to killing one couple and trying to kill the older couple, the one through the window.
Yeah.
But that's in a suicide note, and that's pretty much all we have is that he was a college kid, he had connections to some of the victims, but it's a little thin, you know, especially in this kind of small town.
According to authorities... The only major suspect was a man by the name of Yul Lee Sweeney. And the reason is statements from his wife. And
varying statements from his
wife. Yeah, she did change her story quite a bit. But she did have details that only the killer would know. So the first story that she tells was that they went to a movie, right? And they were out, parked, and he's like, hold on, I gotta take a piss. And
they were philandering.
He leaves for an hour. That's a long piss. And then when he comes back, he's all wet. And not in a good way.
I think she later said that he might have been going out to rob somebody.
No, no.
But then the other story she tells...
No, that happens later. So she comes back and tells a different story and says... This is when she says that she's a little bit more involved in what happened. And she says, yeah, he wanted to go rob these people. And she was there. And she saw it. And, yeah, this is when her story changes a little bit. And this is also when she
gave... participate in the murders and...
Right.
And then at that point, like, she shot the kid. She shot the dude.
Yeah.
And then...
through his planner or date book or some shit.
And then the girl didn't want to consent to having sex with this guy who just murdered her boyfriend.
And he says, I tried getting some from her. Which is not something I would tell my wife. That's weird.
That's weird.
But anyways, the key was that Peggy, his wife, knew details that they didn't publish out to the public, and only the killer would know that. So, one of the major ones was that they threw the book out, his book.
And whatever happened to this guy, this Yul?
He died. He ended up dying. But they didn't have any evidence. but he was actually convicted of a different crime of, I believe it was auto theft. And he had
That's right.
He had a record.
Since he had a record, they gave him a life sentence, right?
Yeah. He was released from prison in 1973. And that was on the previous conviction.
Yeah. They said that he got out because his lawyer, he had a shitty lawyer at some point.
Basically.
And they deemed that his counsel was not like
ineffective. He didn't have
good representation. Yeah.
So, he's out. And the involvement, like the investigation just kind of died. They didn't talk about it anymore. So
they said he's out. Like he's still probably alive.
No, he's definitely dead. That dude is dead. He died in 94.
He's roaming among us. Oh, wow. That's
why the guys, time. That's why the guys in BuzzFeed made that joke about those... it. He could murder all these people, but still see Jurassic Park before he died.
still see Jurassic Park in theaters. That was so funny. Yeah. I was like, those guys won me over. I'd never seen that before.
Yeah, but
they have a whole series. Gotta probably check them out.
Anyways, yeah.
Yeah. Our two sources are this movie, the Wikipedia page for the actual crime, and BuzzFeed Unsolved.
Yeah. We'll credit those.
But yeah, this movie is fun. It's all over the place. It's kind of a mess, but it's also it's got its merits.
Yeah. I think it was fun to watch.
Yeah,
and I actually liked it.
We use fun a lot, but
I kind of like that it's an old school slasher film. I dig those. I like watching those just to kind of for the nostalgia. I think.
I'm excited for you. You've never seen Black Christmas.
No,
it's a treat. Wait till Christmas time. Actually, in December. Oh man, I've got the full month planned
for horror movies.
Yeah, dude, We got Better Watch Out. Have you seen that one?
No.
It's about this kid, like 12-year-old kid in a Christmas sweater who goes crazy. It's a newer one. It's good. Krampus, which I love. I was going to say,
are we going to do Krampus?
Krampus is amazing. It's like Gremlins for a new audience.
Adam Scott's in that,
you've seen it, right?
No, I haven't.
No?
No, I've planned on watching it. I never saw it.
Krampus is Gremlins good. Like they made it like an 80s creature fun horror comedy. Okay. It's amazing. With a big budget. And then Black Christmas, of course, because it's the greatest. And then the fourth one, I don't know. Oh, you know what? I didn't get to see... last year they came out with a movie called Anna and the Apocalypse. And it's a zombie movie that takes place at Christmas. And it's a musical.
Ooh. Let's do that one. That's fun. What about...
So we got the whole month planned there for Christmas.
What about... Is there like a new a horror movie that happens during New Year's?
Sorry. There's one called New Year's Evil.
Okay.
And it's a dumb slasher movie. And that but was is like there a good the
one?
80s.
Is there like a good one? Like,
there's one... So there's a Hulu movie that came out this year called New Year, New You. Because... Uh-huh. Hulu does this thing called, they've been doing this thing this year called Into the Dark. And every month, it's Blumhouse who makes all the cheap, really good horror movies. Most of them are good. They produce a movie for Hulu every month.
Wow.
And I've seen a bunch of them, and some of them are good. The Mother's Day one was good. The Father's Day one was a cool, like, isolation thriller. I saw that one. The Christmas one was a lot of fun.
Okay.
But New Year, New You, without giving away too much, was about three friends who get together, and one of them is like an internet famous person.
Yeah.
And let's just say that these friends have more plans than just reuniting with their super famous friend. They might want to do something a little nefarious. But it's got like a lot of like, social media commentary and a bunch of cool themes, you know, it's a lot of like toxic female friendship themes and social media ruling, you know, showing a different side, a fake side of people. It's interesting.
I'm down.
So yeah, there are If anything, we could just cover an Into the Dark movie.
And October is going to be so good. I love all these mystery movies in October.
Well, you know what's cool? I mean, you know, we should try to watch movies that actually take place on Halloween, which there really aren't that many. There's Halloween, and there's Halloween 2. Season of the Witch.
There's Halloween
which
3.
Which doesn't have Michael Myers.
Halloween 4.
I love Halloween 3 is a different story. That's why I mentioned that.
Which other ones? Which other ones?
There's Tales of Halloween, Stranger Things 2.
Stranger Things 2 does happen during Halloween.
Yeah. The Pumpkin Patch.
Oh, dude. We're going to have so much fun doing this.
Yeah, yeah. And I plan to have different guests and fun people to help us.
Oh, it'll be fun.
Analyze or just laugh at a goofy movie.
Dude.
So this is, and a goofy movie. Yeah, will be one of them.
Yeah, we're going to do a goofy movie? Pauly Shore? Doesn't Pauly Shore in that movie?
Leaning Tower of Cheesa.
Yeah, of course.
Pauly Shore is it. That's a bad movie. There's no... That's a mystery movie because what's the the mystery is why we
why does it exist?
The Goofy movie. Why Disney greenlit the Goofy movie. But no, actually kids, peers, people my age seem to have a pretty warm spot for that movie.
Now I'm trying to figure out what scary movies there were during Halloween.
There's really not that many.
Which is weird. You would think there would be more. Can we watch Ernest Scared Stupid? That happens during Halloween.
No, but that makes sense. That would make sense.
All right. Well, we'll think about this. We got a whole couple months to think about this and plan.
Oh, yeah. 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 Thanks for joining us for our inaugural flight. Also, if you don't know, if you have never listened, check out the Stack Pack where we cover the Unsolved Mysteries original television show hosted by Robert Stack. And give us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Yeah. Thanks. I'm David Howell.
And I'm Eli Dominguez.
And follow us. I don't know. We don't have social media yet. This is our first episode. Actually, we should probably just say our handles. I'm David Howell, DAVYHLW on Instagram and Twitter.
And I'm Big Bad Vinyl Dad on Instagram and Twitter.
Thanks for hanging out with us on our first episode of The Spook Troop. That's the official title now. Added this later. Come back next week and we're going to watch another fun movie. Maybe Duel, maybe something else. But thanks for checking us out. Please leave a review and let us know if you liked it. Have a good week.